Now, tax, corporation tax, it hasn't gone away, you know, but it could. And it's now dominated by three main players. What's the story, Christina?
Yeah, so the IFAC, the Fiscal Advisory Council, have come out with a report looking at Ireland's corporation taxes over the last number of years. But it says that three groups basically are bringing in a third or so of our corporation tax take. So I think it came in at 5.2 billion in 2021 by those three groups, if I'm right. They didn't name the groups, but I suppose everybody sort of knows the big players in the corporation tax world of Ireland. You know, Apple have already come out, I think, before to say that they are one of the number one tax contributors, and you know, they're within the pharma and the tech industry, basically. So I think a lot of people can probably guess. But yeah, it just is speaking to the perhaps, you know, the uncertainty perhaps of those sectors going into the future, you know, not, you know, putting all our eggs in one basket, and obviously having massive tax take coming over the next couple of years. I think it is.
So like, even if revenues aren't declining, the risk potentially is increasing given
our
level of
dependence. We're going to have, I think, 24.3 billion this year, possibly 25 billion next year. And the question is, I suppose, with, you know, we've been here before with the construction industry, you know, relying on that for a lot of, you know, tax generation in the economy. And we know how that ended. And I think the tech industry particularly has always been sort of the golden child in Ireland for so long. It just seemed to be that industry that could never falter. But we've seen creaks within that industry over the last year or so. And I think that is creating, you know, a bit of nervousness, I think, within government about how we're going to handle, you know, this massive money which is coming in, which, you know, obviously a lot of countries, other places around the world would love to be in our position. But it's just, you know, making sure that we're utilising that fund appropriately and we're not, you know, putting it into everyday expenses, perhaps looking at maybe
a bigger
picture.
What's the independent advice on that in terms of where it should go for people who don't have to run for election?
Yeah.
Those economists.
Well, you see, it's always tempting for politicians when they get a lot of, you know, money in the back pocket, particularly when you're coming to, you know, the end of a government term, you know, possibly 24, 25, you know, if you're going to have a lot of money swashing around, you know, the temptation is there to always put it into things like tax. And that's exactly what the Fiscal Council has said the government shouldn't be doing. You know, you should be looking at this special fund that the government, in fairness, has said that they want to set up. It's not the rainy day fund. I think Micheál Martin took issue with that. And then it's going to be the financial reserve fund, or, you know, there's lots of
rainy
namings.
Day fund is
rainy
gone.
Day,
that's
something
climate change,
something
quite,
like that. But basically, a nice savings account to put all this money in and, you know, invest it properly. You know, and a lot of people are saying, look, a good place to start would be like big infrastructure projects. If you have the money there, you know, let's pump it into something that's badly needed rather than something that you're going to use in a budget that's going to roll around every single year, and perhaps that money won't be there one day.
All right. Who's with the ESRI and IFAC on this? Hands up. Who wants to go first on who's with the independent economic advisors on this? Anyone?
I think there's an element of, you know, we haven't had the summer economic statements yet. We don't know the exact figures yet. There's definitely a degree of giddiness regarding the amount of money going around political circles. And it's a bit unsettling to hear some of the commentary in the corridors of Leinster House.
If we have it,
we'll spend it. The whole Charlie McCreevy line is been used. There's been,
although they've been vehemently denying that it is the Charlie McCreevy approach.
I know, but these are concerns that this would be the approach that, you know, sure, like we better spend the money because, you know, if Sinn Féin get in the next time, sure, we can't give them that amount of money. What'll they do with it? This is the kind of level of kind of chit-chat that's going around the corridors of Leinster House. We're talking about a serious amount of money. We're talking about a crisis we have in housing and health. We can't make the mistakes of the past, but we do need to see investment in these areas. I mean, I suppose one kind of offbeat area that I'd like to see investment in is how do we expand our labour market in the areas of construction? You know, if we're to build the houses we need, if we're to build the elective hospitals we need and the infrastructure we need, we're going to need construction workers. So you're we don't
about
have them.
Training, apprenticeship, that kind of thing.
Proper, like ambitious training and apprenticeship programs, which will then keep the economy going further. These are the kind of areas that we need to see a bit of creativity being used, which I think would be responsible spending of this money.
All right. How much would you say? What kind of a war chest or a reserve fund or a rainy day fund would you like to see built up?
Look, I don't know. I wouldn't put a figure on it. I'm not an economist, but I do think that there is a balance to be struck here with the amount of money that seemingly comes in between being ambitious and yet being responsible.
You'd like to prioritise training of people in the construction.
I'd like to see that included. I want to see capital projects being faster, but we do need the workers to actually deliver them.
Okay. Rory O'Murricu, what do you, you know, all of this corporate tax, a rainy day fund, some of it goes into a rainy day fund?
Well, look, a state wealth fund makes sense. Look, what would you call this? Like windfall taxation that we can't necessarily rely on. I know there are projections into the future in relation to taxation that won't necessarily be coming. You know what I mean? Projected increases that aren't necessarily tied to this sort of money. But at this point in time, and I'm going to have to agree with Duncan, you know what I mean? Obviously, this is going to be a very friendly conversation, it seems. You know what I mean?
Well, give it time.
Yeah. The fact is, we have huge failings in relation to, obviously, infrastructure. We know that the NDP was decided upon and figures were determined upon, and we know the issues there are with them at a point in time when we didn't even realise the population growth we are going to have. So we know that if we talk about housing and we actually take away even the human stories out of it and the misery that people are dealing with, what you're also dealing with, you're dealing with IBEC, you're dealing with companies, you're dealing with the IDA that are saying it is an issue in relation to future economic driver. So we really need to get a handle on those major infrastructural projects, dealing with the housing crisis, dealing with the health crisis, and then making sure, and then also we have to get the offshore wind energy projects up and running, and I'd like to think that this state would be able to get some sort of dividend back from that also.
All right. Eimear Curry, we're in danger of running into agreement here, are we? This is going to be saved aside, a low-risk approach taken to this. It's not going to be blown today. It's going to be kept aside in large part and invested in infrastructure. Would you agree with that?
Well, if there is idle chit-chat about blowing this money, I'm not hearing it. I think this is an issue that has been around for a while. The over-concentration in a small number of corporate tax companies. And I think this is why we've been pushing the need for a surplus. And we've seen that back as far as 2019 with the National Reserve Fund that we started up. So I think it isn't to be used for everyday spending. I think we've been very clear about that. I think the things that we have flagged that we've been looking at are an anti-austerity fund, so careful management for the future.
So if the economy is struggling in the future, spend the money to stimulate the economy. And so the opposite to that, when I have it, I spend it.
Or the things that we've seen, the shocks that we have seen over the last couple of years. We had that money, we've needed to spend it. But also, Michael McGrath has said about future-proofing the country, because we've seen the census, we have an ageing population, we have a growing population, an additional 7.6%.
Right. So you probably know the question I'm going to ask you then. Where does spending $1.5 billion in a tax cut in an era of high inflation feed into that? And the only rationale that seems to be there behind it is that, this is according to the Taoiseach, that Middle Ireland needs to be looked after. We said we'll do it before there was a war in Ukraine and a pandemic. We said we'd do it, so we're going to do it.
I think we're talking about the spending the surplus. We have been talking about spending the surplus. Now we're talking about the next budget. And I don't understand why there's such a surprise about us saying that there should be tax cuts. We adjusted the tax bans and credits in the last two budgets. It is well flagged that Fine Gael want to reduce tax. We've been talking about bringing the higher band up to 50,000 for a couple of years now. We've brought it up to 40 from 33,000.
Sure, but I suppose so what people might be looking at is that there's been a withdrawal of the fuel subsidies. The excise on petrol and diesel has just gone back to where it was again. And here's 1.5 billion being identified ahead of a budget actually being formally announced and effectively being promised in an op-ed at a time when across Europe countries are trying to hold back inflation.
I don't think it's been promised. I think you have three, yes, heavy-hitting ministers, junior ministers, that have set out their stole, and they've probably been the first to kick off the conversations around where we do spend and prioritise for the next budget. But we have not been left wanting when it comes to, if people are struggling with cost of living, then we are delivering with packages.
All right.
So we will do again.
Okay, Rory O'Murricu, according to the ESRI, amongst the indicators, you know, consistent poverty, absolute poverty has come down since 2018. So have they been delivering across the board?
No, not in any way. And I just want to say, in relation to the op-eds, I think we all recognise that that's Fine Gael putting clear blue water between themselves and Fianna Fáil, and probably an acceptance that there are certain cohorts of voters that have already made their decision in relation to them. So it's going to be a fight out to the end around the rest. Look, the fact is, if I even just deal with the anecdotal cases that come through my constituency office, or the
people, let's be clear on where you're coming from. Do you want to see tax reductions?
Oh yeah, look, tax reductions are absolutely fine if it's fair from a point of view of giving struggling workers and families an increase in their pocket. But the problem is, see, the people that are coming and dealing with us at the minute are talking about, obviously, the fact that we haven't dealt with the food inflation issue, the fact that we have those other issues as regards the cost of living. It's also, if we're talking specifically about disability services and everything, you're talking about people that are under severe pressure, that are attempting to get loans together so they can go and get, let's say, whether it's assessments or therapies that they can't get under the present system at this point in time. I think what everyone wants to see is a fairer society where we can actually deliver for people, and that's obviously healthcare, it's housing, it's whatever. And look, when we're talking about cost of people are living, it all goes back to accommodation and the cost of rents, the cost of mortgages.
Specifically, what's wrong with the proposal to cut tax for middle-income earners using 1.5 billion, in your view?
Yeah, well, look, let's see. I'm still saying that 1.5 billion, that if we can address something far more directed in relation to people that are under severe pressure, if we can put something together, and like we have made proposals obviously in relation to energy caps.
Right. It's a second order priority in your view.
Hold on a second. We can do both here. So it's not as if we're suddenly saying all those supports that we've provided we're going to take away. You're talking about, you actually used the words direct supports. Isn't that what we've been doing through the cost of living crisis with one-off payments and supports? So I would also make the argument, I think it was a bit of pressure that led to some of those being proposed in the first place.
I want to bring Duncan Smith.
I think there's a degree of nervousness here because of the manner in which this is announced. I mean, it's one of the first signs of summer is that Leo Varadkar will come out and announce that we're going to have a tax cut in the budget in an attempt to frame the budget negotiations or the budget debates into the summer. I think I'd be nervous about having a tax cut if that's going to be plugged with windfall taxes or, you know, taxes that we can't rely on into the future, because we've made that mistake before by narrowing the tax base, by narrowing the tax take, and having it like we had in the past with stamp duty, if we're going to have it now with these corporation tax, because we will pay for that down the end. We have public services that are absolutely struggling. I had a private member's bill motion with the Labour Party last week on autism disability services and community disability network teams. Massive vacancy rates there. We can go down the list with health. We can go down the list with transport infrastructure and all these different elements of public services which are lacking and deficient. So to then, in the last days of May, frame a budget in around a 30% tax cut for a middle Ireland. I don't think that's responsible budget framing. I don't think that's responsible policy making. And in the past, it's been Pascal Donoghue that has, of his own party, that's knocked that on the head. And I think this year it'll be Michael McGrath of Fianna Fáil that will give this a dignified burial.
I think what it actually comes down to, like, is I was speaking to a good few Fianna Fáilers about, you know, was there any animosity between it, those op-eds and the Independent. And, you know, they're saying, look, there's always this sort of tension, this wrangling, this public sort of jostling between the two parties in the run-up to the budget. But it's never been through like opinion pieces that are published in a national
newspaper. Yeah, Lisa
Chambers,
your son and colleague, made that point last night, Eimear Curry, saying that one of the people who wrote the op-ed is Jennifer Carol McNeill. She works a few offices down from Michael McGrath. All she had to do was knock on the door and communicate her ideas to Michael McGrath. So why take to this op-ed that is guaranteed, as one Fine Gaeler said, I can't believe they took the bait, is guaranteed to start off a public argument on this?
First of all, just back to Duncan's point, nobody is talking about plugging holes using one-off windfall. That we have said that consistently. It won't be going We won't be putting it on plugging the holes that you have identified.
If people are seeking, say, disability services, and they're being told we don't have the resources to pay for that, if you're looking at things in the order of millions, and then promises or commitments can be made ahead of time with confidence of hundreds of millions in the form of a tax cut, people like that are entitled to feel that they are not being prioritised as much, aren't they?
We've said three things. The anti-austerity fund, future-proofing, like I said, ageing population and growing population, and once-off capital investment. So that's the area that we are in relation to how you would spend the surplus. But when it comes to disability service, it's disingenuous to say that it's about funding. It's just it's only about funding. We know that we have recruitment issues. We are trying to fill places if they're SLTs, OTs, psychologists. The money is there, and in relation to housing as well, that has been mentioned. It's the same thing. If we need to increase the budget, we'll increase the budget. But we're also dealing with staff shortages, construction shortages, and other issues, but it hasn't been down to budgets. You mentioned the opinion piece, so they decided to do it a different way. Is that what this is really boiling down to? If Jennifer's down the corridor from Michael McGrath, there was nothing new in this proposal.
So
we have flagged because it sets out our stall. It's three.
That's it.
It's essentially everyone knows the hashtag FFG has been around for a good few years since the Confidence and Supply Agreement. You know, the two parties being coalescing together and, you know, basically being in bed together, and how do they actually cut the cord when we get to the next election? And this is very much what it's about. It is, as you said, putting the blue water out there saying, OK, it's actually in the programme for government. There's no doubt about it. Those index taxation bans are in there. They all agreed to that when they got together. But the fact that people are coming out with opinion pieces calling for something that is within the government and putting a Fine Gael stamp on it is very much pointing to the fact that when the budget comes along, they can point to those tax cuts that are probably most likely going to be there and say, look, that's a Fine Gael slice of the budget
pie
there.
Every year Willie O'Dea comes out and says
isn't it a coincidence that, you know, Michael McGrath is the Minister for Finance, Pascal Donoghue was the Minister for Finance, but the Minister for Finance traditionally gets to announce the taxation measures, and now that a Fine Gael minister won't be announcing the taxation measures, people are getting in ahead of the gun, it might be argued, and announcing them for him.
I don't think there's anything new here about high profile politicians saying what they want to see in the next budget. Willie O'Dea has done it year after year after year. He nearly signals when you start talking about the budget because he talks about a fiver for the pension. This is the only difference here is that Our junior ministers have gone
all
out
right
there.
Rory O'Murricu.
It's setting out the stall. It's literally, it's talking to the public. If you are interested in having this conversation intergovernmentally, there's a million ways that could happen. So I don't see anything else other than what I said earlier. It's about the clear blue water. And it's the fact is they're aiming at a particular cohort of voters and all the rest of it, at what people are calling Middle Ireland. Now, I would say Middle Ireland, whose kids can't get houses at this point in time, whether that's can't get rentals or can't get purchasing.
Sure, but so which brings us back to the point about infrastructure. If you have a limited labour market pool, if you have construction inflation, if you have, what is the money going to do other than inflate the current market? Back at the last boom, the ESRI were saying, is this really the time to take on big infrastructure projects and start to engage in them, because you have a limited pool of construction workers and they'll be competing for a bigger and bigger pile of cash, and all you'll have is further construction inflation.
Well, I don't think anyone, it's going to come as a particular shock to say, I think the focus has to be absolutely on housing. I may have an issue in relation to the targets the government set that they're not making. But the fact is, we are not delivering a sufficient amount to change the paradigm in relation to how people are dealing with this.
What about the workers for the delivery of the housing? Well, where are they going to live?
Well, there has to be a concentration on it. We are dealing with the fact there hasn't been a sufficient amount of workforce planning. We do need to look at many ways of training. And I know that there have been some, more imaginative ways, looking at apprenticeships and all the rest of it. We need to look at add-on courses and whatever. Here, we also, like, let's be real. And the difficulty is that you probably have a huge amount of people in this country at this point in time that we would need to just get an assessment in relation to whether they can actually build or be trained quickly.
With the exception of plumbing and electrician, the traditional wet trades in terms of apprenticeships are absolutely dying.
You're talking about bricklayers and plasterers.
There's 7 bricklaying apprentices entered the system in the last year. 1 tiler. You know, this is where we're at. Now, we have Minister for Higher Education.
So if you go back a few decades, Irish people went to London, they worked on the sites. In a previous life, many decades ago,
they could rent cheap.
Living in Germany, I worked in a bar where the people who drank in that bar were Irish construction workers and British construction workers who were working on building sites all over Germany, living in a variety of living arrangements, up to and including porter cabins. But the facts were that Germany couldn't recruit construction workers quick enough, so they imported people from abroad to build their infrastructure projects. I mean, is that the answer here? And where will they live if they do come here?
This is getting back to my first point when you asked the question about what we do with the money. We need an ambitious labour force widening programme. We do need to import workers. We need to train workers well. The point I'm making about the apprenticeships, they are dead on their feet at the moment. Traditionally in Ireland, you'd have had the big companies, the Sisks and the McNamara's, and that bring an awful lot of tradespeople into the business through apprenticeships. That's ended now. You're looking at your home renovators and your extension builders, hoping that they'll bring on a carpenter or a bricklayer. That's not bringing
back in the last
on scale.
They resorted to Gamma as well. Yeah, like but conditions for workers,
which is something, which is a lesson that needs to be learned. But in the last boom in 2006. Was the most houses ever built by the state, or in the state, 83,000. We had 260,000 workers in construction. Now we have less than 130,000. So we have less than 50% the amount of workers, and we need to build more than we built in 2006. So we need to be ambitious in terms of getting workers over here and training workers in the construction sector, because there's no other way around it.
Just and very quickly, can we also look, because we've been talking about new technologies for a long time, but like, because I've seen it in operation, 3D concrete printing, and it's unbelievable. Now, I'm not saying it's a silver bullet, but it and modular builds. And look, we've been talking about modular builds forever, and I know the issues in relation to ramping up. But the fact is, you're talking about something where you can get a hell of a lot more bang for buck from your materials, environmental saves, and also alongside that, you can also get the benefit.
The workforce planning has not been done to any sufficient degree.
On modular
housing, though, we have to remove the political toxicity from modular housing. Yes. When they first came on the scene in 2014, 2015,
there's
been a degree of political toxicity. We have to embrace modular housing.
Just back on the recruitment point, Ian McCrory, because you mentioned about other areas like disability, and it exists in health, but now we're on construction. But what's the strategy for attracting people in? Because, you know, is it going to be attractive wages? Where are people going to live if they are supposed to come to this country? What's the big strategic vision for filling these posts and getting people into the vital sectors of the economy to make sure a country that has a bank balance like Ireland has services commensurate with that bank balance?
Well, we are at full employment. So, that's a challenge in itself. But we are attracting people to Ireland, despite all the problems that are aired religiously by the opposition. We've seen in the census how now net immigration
has... But this
has
isn't an opposition. You identified it yourself. Recruitment is an issue. So how's the government planning, even on an area like construction, going to get over that?
Yeah, so we are going to have to go out and find people that are going to do it. And we're seeing that with our disability services as well. We have a critical skills list. We do need to be able to blow open the traditional ways that we are recruiting people and to bring them in, and
Duncan is right about the European Union, are you?
If we have to, yes. And are there people that have come to the country in the last couple of years? Are there opportunities there? But the training is available. We have apprenticeships. We've also brought in more unusual and new types of apprenticeships over the last couple of years. But Duncan is right that we can't forget the more traditional roles as well.
Right. And those people, I think, have difficulties getting their off-site days in third level colleges to actually complete and get signed off an apprenticeship. That's a particular issue, I suppose, that, you know, maybe people didn't brief themselves on before this. So we won't get into the mire on that. Christina Finn, though, have we had any indication as to how much concern this issue of the narrowing of the three big payers is having? What's the impact? What's the concern? And more to the point, did we get any indication as to what the strategy is for Ireland in terms of what other areas or sectors it's looking at beyond big tech? Has any discussion begun in detail about that?
Like, there's always been, if you go to the Exchequer returns press conference over the last number of years, you always got the feeling of a bit of nervousness and wariness when you had the chief financial officer within the Department of Finance and Pascal there, you know, sort of not knowing this ballooning figure of corporation tax and exactly how they were going to deal with it. There's been talk about, you know, separating out the corporation tax returns from the Exchequer returns so that we're not getting such a skewed view of the economy and where we are with it. But look, I feel the government seem to be going down the road of this wealth fund. But I definitely think that there's going to be the temptation there to, despite what Ian says, is use it for some, you know, nicer ticket issue items that, you know, will look well, I think, coming up to an election time. You know, it's just, it's too big of a temptation, I think, for the government and for the political parties, as you said, to you know, they are wary about Sinn Féin coming up behind them and being left with quite a large war chest and what might be used with that.
Eimear Curry, what is the plan for life beyond big tech? Is there a sort of a strategic division vision being developed now for what's going to happen when, you know, not necessarily when they depart, but just diversifying what's driving the tax base of the economy?
Well, Christina's right about looking at a model that removes the corporation tax cushion, so that we have a number that reflects where we are without that big amount of money, but I think we've consistently shown, actually back to 2011, that we have prioritised jobs. We are capable of putting together a jobs plan, a jobs policy, of making Ireland attractive to lots of different sectors. IDA do a great job. Enterprise Ireland are doing a fantastic job. Our Leos are doing a great job in our communities. They're now looking after companies that have more employees. So corporation tax is one part of a very big picture that we have driven consistently since 2011. So, you know, it's one part of it.
All right. Rory O'Murica, would you accept that possibly some of the things that attracts high value workers into this country, or some of the things they weigh up, is the taxation rate, and that maybe a cut in the taxation rate, if it affects higher earners, is actually something that they weigh up when considering whether or not they'll come to Ireland, and whether companies, it affects companies' decisions on coming to Ireland and whether they could attract workers?
Companies make huge determinations, and it's everything in relation to, you know, the obvious thing that we used to say we had, you know, was a guaranteed you know, safe, secure electricity supply, right? You know, everyone remembers from junior cert geography, from that right through to an educated workforce, an English-speaking country within the European Union, and a number of other factors. Yeah, obviously corporation tax is a particular factor, particularly for these companies.
In terms of the income tax that workers pay, and the ability to attract people in that, this much at this stage, much maligned 1.5 billion euro income tax cut is actually one of the things that could affect a worker's decision to come here or not.
See, the bigger issue that I'm getting is in relation to they can't get anywhere to stay. Accommodation is the bigger issue. As I say, you get it from ISMI, you get it from IBEC, you're getting it from the IDA. I know that Kevin Meenan, one of our councillors, was over in New York with Loud County Council, and one of the issues they were saying, what's the story in relation to housing? Is it a bit, you know what I mean? So you're getting worries at every particular level, and that's something that we have to deal with.
Would you accept, Duncan Smith, that you know sometimes it is advanced as a rationale for attracting companies here, or when there is inward investment, that the income tax rate that's paid here for the higher earners, that high value jobs are trying to attract in, that the higher rate of tax is hit at a lower level than elsewhere, and that may affect people's decision to come here or not?
It may do, but it's interesting data that was released this week. There's only two sections of workers that haven't had their wages, the real power of their wages, impacted over the last four quarters, and that is those who work in mining and those who work in tech. So they're the ones who are actually managing through their wage earnings to stay ahead somewhat of the rate of inflation and the cost of living. So they will probably be the one group that maybe wouldn't need or be looking for the tax break, because their wages are actually still having the power because they are earning so much at this stage. So I don't think that particular ask would hold water for individual tech workers, or at least it shouldn't.
All right. If anybody is texting into us on 51551 or contacting us in latedebate@rte.ie, just apologies if we haven't got your texts or messages yet. There's just a bit of a technical issue with the screen in front of me. So we will get to text messages and emails and the like at the nearest possible opportunity. What about Christina Finn? What the political pressure that this is going to put on the coalition in the lead up, in the final, whatever, 18 months of the government, and there are competing priorities. Are we seeing any sign of strains between the coalition parties yet on the issue of spending and priorities? Have we already seen the starting gun fired on that, or is it too early for all that crack?
Look, I think it is a bit too early. Like, I think the speculation or the reporting perhaps on the row between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, you know, it sort of happens every year. You know, it is coming into the summer season. Something similar happened last year. People cast their mind back to when Leo Varadkar floated that idea of the new tax band for, you know, for people, that was just, it wasn't in the programme for government. He thought maybe it might be a good idea, and it was much to surprise to the Fianna Fáil, and the same sort of feathers were ruffled, I think, between then. Look, I think over the next couple of months you're going to see definitely a lot more you know, back and forth between the parties, particularly on the issue of climate change, climate action with the Greens. And I'll be discussing that a bit later, but, you know, priorities there, I think they'll definitely want to get a lot more over the line as we approach.
Let's discuss it now. Eimear Curry, the bit of a difference, at group level in the European Parliament, the groups to which you belong, there would be a difference between the EPP on the biodiversity issue and the Greens. What was that walkout about in the European Parliament? That your colleague in the government party, Brian Leddon, was flagging.
Well, I think there's been a lot of attention about this during the week, and I think we need to reassure people that nothing is going to be imposed on farmers or on individuals, and we've been making the case in Europe that Ireland has to be able to manage this itself. So I think that's where we are at the moment. There's been no definite decisions taken. I think this is a process, but the Minister for Agriculture has made very clear that this will have to be done carefully and sensitively, and it shouldn't impact individual farmers.
Now, Christina, just for anyone who didn't hear what Brian Leddon had to say, what was the issue he raised? What happened?
Yeah, so basically it was this big debate about this nature restoration law, which, you know, has kind of come up a bit out of nowhere. There's a lot in that law and legislation, but he did pick up against some of his Fine Gael colleagues, particularly about that issue with the European aspect of it. And he kind of borrowed a term used by Mary Lou MacDonald, saying that there was a Tweedledum, Tweedledee aspect. She often uses that about Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. And he was hitting back at Sinn Féin on that one, and saying that it was surprising that Sinn Féin and Fine Gael were actually at one on this issue. So,
in
terms of having issues within the nature restoration aspects of it.
Hang on, I see Rory O'Murray is pulling on his almost new EU affairs hat there. Go on.
No. I'm not in any way pulling anything in relation to it. Look, everybody knows that obviously there was a vote in support of the Agri Committee in the EU as regards, and they had made decisions that they're not particularly happy with the nature restoration law. Now, the EPP have obviously, in the Environment Committee, have I think disengaged from negotiations. I think there needs to be a re-engagement, because the fact is we need to salvage this. Look, and I know it's very easy to say this. Look, biodiversity, we all know the issues that we're dealing with. We all know action needs to be taken. It's a matter of how
do you find yourself in the same corner of the swamp?
Well, here,
so
let's oh yeah. Well, here,
Fine Gael.
We had obviously particular issues in relation to this. All of this can be saved by amendment. So let's get on with putting something together that's. And there's probably been a really bad job done, particularly from a governmental point of view, as regards communicating and the whole interaction between farmers, the government, and even some of the political discourse isn't going anywhere. Anyone that's been at an IFA meeting will hear from farmers who are actually realise the world is changing, they're up for it, but you need to work alongside them. It's about grant schemes, it's about a nature restoration fund, it's about putting the money and then giving people the options.
And it has to be noted that Leo Varadkar was asked about this, I think, in Leader's Question a week or so ago, and he had come out quite strong on it, saying, you know, he almost predicted the walkout or the pushback against it, because he was like, this isn't a done deal. You know, I'd have serious reservations about a lot of it, which sort of did send the flag up that this wasn't
targets by 2030 and 2050. You can bring people along the road a certain amount. Yeah, but if you're missing your targets and the time is running out, then is that always the option?
Like, I mean, this has gone from naught to toxic in like jig time. It's incredible. Like, it's reached the floor of the doll as if this is going to be a massive imposition that's just going to be imposed on the whole country. We're talking about nature restoration. Some of the targets in this are less than the government's own targets for their
climate
action.
You're kind of scratching your head about what the fuss is, are you?
Yeah, I'm kind of, when you go through, I haven't gone through the detail of it, but when you're going through the top line issues, you're talking about restoring nature, you're talking about restoring habitats. You're talking about stuff we actually need to do. But this has reached the floor of the doll in quite a toxic, aggressive way, which is really worrying.
And the Greens are taking a particularly really, really strong point on this, saying it's been totally blown out of proportion, that the rewetting of the bogs, they're saying, won't come from farmland. Yeah. They said that it can actually be done through
and there's a whole argument about
Let's salvage it.
Whether or not,
okay. Yeah, so no walkouts, debate it.